This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Down a Fulham road we're burning with ambition. The first division is where we want to be. And if you've seen what a team we've got this season, you know the reason we'll get there easily. But first we're heading down a Wembley way to show the world that we can really play. Oh, this year we're gonna win the cup.
Good evening. This is Love Sport London. It's the Fulham Fan Show. Miles Blumsome here, joined by Dom and Jack from the Fulhamish podcast. Gentlemen, good evening.
Good evening.
You must be happy after the weekend, 1-0 win.
3 points is 3 points.
3 points is 3 points. Doesn't matter how they come. And even Caviero with the goal as well, justifying the price tag straight away.
Easily, yeah, you know, 15 million. Bargain, some would say.
Bargain for worldies, basically.
Bargain for worldies. Let's kick off the show straight away, actually, Dom, with the three-word reviews. You've got them from your social media channels, right?
Yeah, so let's start off with Twitter. We had Filamato with Caviero's killer curler, Sophie Johnson with only score worldies, and Patrick Brown with pop the carver. moving across to Instagram, we had LC14M with who needs Kearney, Matt Baston with boring yet effective. I think that probably sums up most of the game. Michael Tripp with hole in one. I like that one. Facebook with Dole in Hull, with that was from Dave Jones. Crystal Phillips with the Tigers mauled, and Pit Line, which was the name of our podcast on Monday, Hull as dishwater.
Yeah, like, who said Hull is dull? Was dull in Hull? Like, come on, it's a win. It's a win. A win's a win.
It was possibly one of the worst games I've ever seen, like, ever.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter at the end, does it?
Was it like 7 hours on the train to see that absolute tripe?
Yes.
But we got the job done and we won the game.
When you put the 7 hours on the train into perspective, it does make you think, I could have used a bit of excitement.
Exactly, yeah. But it was a good goal and 3 points.
At least the train was direct. At least we didn't have to go via anywhere.
Yeah.
At least you just got on at King's Cross and got off at Hull.
Weren't bouncing around. If you want to send in some more three-word reviews, by the way, 0208 70 2558 is our number. Call us. You can also send us a message on WhatsApp at Lovesport Radio. On Twitter as well. Even Caviero was the moment of magic. A great goal as well, which separated the two sides. He's just been signed, like we said, value for money straight away.
Yeah, I feel like he has scored that goal about five times this season. Like, he scored a very similar one against Huddersfield, where Joe Bryan sort of made the outside run, giving him space to put it onto his right foot and curl it into the top corner. He had a similar one, was it Reading a few weeks ago? You know, he scored a goal from outside the box against Charlton. You know, he scored that similar goal a lot of times, and the players in the Championship just seem to give him that space to get onto his right foot, and he's going to put it in the far post top corner.
You'd think they'd have figured it out by now, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think that he's just got a bit of a wand on him. And talk about Tom Kearney's curlers, but Cav's curlers are right up there as well. You mentioned the one kind of came out of nowhere against Charlton. He didn't look like he was going to score, but he did. But it was perfectly kind of picturesque kind of goal, straight into the corner, and the keeper didn't move.
Bit of slow motion
as
it goes in.
I mean, it was the only chance of the game.
Yeah, I don't remember anything else, honestly.
You don't remember anything else because it was boring, though, right? No other reasons.
Well, I had a few, but... oh, well.
just a couple. Some bad news have come out of this out today, though, about Mitrovic being injured. 2 to 4 weeks, I read. Ligament damage. That's not great.
No, when he was obviously being stretched off, you know, we were thinking it could be the length of Harry Kane's injury. You know, you really didn't know. And, you know, 3 to 4 weeks. Yeah, but is that 3 to 4 weeks until he's back in training? Is that 3 to 4 weeks until he's, you know, match fit again? And the thing is, with these kind of injuries, and especially with someone like Mitrovic, you don't want to rush him back and then him not be at his full potential for the rest of the season. And maybe if he picked up another knock, then he'd be at the playoffs or the final run of the season. So I think we have got to be very careful with this. I said it on the podcast on Monday that I do think some fans are overreacting how much it is going to affect us, though. Because we've had two games this season, three, but if you take away the Southampton League Cup game, we had the QPR game, obviously, when Mitrovic was suspended, and then the game against Villa, and we won them both. So it's not like we're completely nullified about Mitrovic. And if anything, sometimes having Mitrovic in our side and the way we play football, we kind of have to
not play to his strengths.
Play to his strengths, yeah, instead of the team's strengths, if that makes sense. And, you know, with someone, let's say, it looks like, I would argue, Bobby Reed's probably going to be playing through the middle, just because I think Abubakar Kamara is still out injured for another 2 to 3 weeks as well. So you'd expect the front three to maybe be him, Knockaert and Caballero. But, you know, maybe I think you just have to adapt the way you play.
Yeah.
To the forward line. You got, you know, Bobby Reed, when he was at Bristol City before he moved to Cardiff, was banging goals left, right and centre. It's not like we're bringing in, you know, I don't know, Stephen Humphreys as striker, or you've only got Jay Stansfield to play up front. I do think that we do have, you know, the players to come in and fill the gap. Not necessarily have the same ability as Mitrovic, but it's not like it's going to be an absolute car crash about him.
On paper, Bobby Reed came in for this type of situation. He came in to be the player that would replace Mitrovic if Mitrovic wasn't playing.
Yeah, when he came in from a Premier League club, he'd torn up in the Championship before that. Yeah. So he's got the calibre.
Yeah,
I'm not worried at all. That Mitrovic obviously brings a lot of goals and he brings a presence about him, but we could be more direct. We've got more pace now going forward, Bobby Reed up front.
Yeah, so in terms of the overall performance, I know it was a dull game, but these are the types of games that are very difficult to negotiate sometimes, to navigate, to get through. Getting out of it with a win is nothing but positive.
Yeah, no, it was one of those ugly wins that we definitely needed to get. You know, I'm thinking of the game away to Middlesbrough back in, was it maybe October, where obviously we were down to 10 men, but it finished 0-0. But it was the kind of game where you kind of take that game by the scuff of the neck and, you know, win the game. And we did this. We took our only chance, and I'm not a fan of the whole expected goals nonsense, but
yeah,
we had the lowest expected goals, I think, in the Championship this weekend of 0.11. But
how have you scored 0.11 of a goal? Oh, it almost went in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's why I will never understand it. And obviously, when the team first came out, I don't know, and it wasn't necessarily surprising with some of the changes that was made, but obviously Joe Brown was on the bench, no Bettinelli on the bench, so you could see him leaving in the near future. You know, Ken McDonald kept his position in the middle of the pitch, and I thought he did very well. You know, I was fairly surprised with the team that played, but I think it did the job that it was needed to do, and I think Scott Parker actually got the team spot on, because I think he learnt from the lessons of the reverse fixture where we lost 3-0. You could definitely tell we're a lot more solid defensively. You can tell that of Michael Hector. An interesting point is, obviously, everyone was wondering who would Michael Hector be partnering in the defence, and it turned out to be Tim Ream, which is what I thought it should be. I think Mawson's been quite poor, well, ever since he got injured last season, really. Ever since he's come back, I think he's been fairly average. So, yeah, I think we're starting to see something, but it needs to be something to build on, as opposed to a flash in the pan. How often this season have we sort of got on a run of results and then the next game, we end up losing?
Yeah.
So I think it's vitally important that this is the start of the run, if that makes sense. Because, you know, look at Leeds, what they've won. One in the last six. West Brom aren't in good form either. These are the type of periods of the season when the teams above you aren't in good form, which you need to take advantage of. And we haven't done that. Even looking over, you know, the Christmas period, the game at Luton, should have won that. Game against Reading, we should have won that. That would be an extra 5 points, and, you know, we'd pretty much be on Leeds and West Brom's coattails.
Yeah, well, I looked at the form guide. I think Leeds are down in 18th in the form guide over the last six games. West Brom are 13th, maybe. Fulham, 7 points off the automatic promotion places, and with the way Leeds are playing at the moment, it seems like the wobble started early already. It's not off the cards.
I think that Brentford might nick top two, and it's not out of the question. You know, this is hypothetical. If we go on a run, I genuinely think the top two still up for grabs for us and Brentford.
Mm.
Leeds and West Brom still got to play them. Leeds and West Brom still got to play each other. There's chances for teams to take points from each other. Leeds look a little bit like they're burning out. They can burn out like they did last season. West Brom have been shaky away from home and at home. I genuinely think we can still get top two with Brentford.
Or Fulham tend to have a better second half of the season as well.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably the best first half of a Championship season we've ever had.
Yeah,
And so that's something to point out with. And, you know, we always do push on the second half of the season. It always takes us about 6 months to work out what our best team is. I still don't think Scott Parker does. But one thing that hasn't helped Scott Parker is injuries this season. We haven't had all our midfielders available. We don't actually know probably what our best move three is. We can ponder see what they are, but we don't actually know what they are. But again, we're seeing it. I just feel like we looked a lot more solid against Hull, and that is something. Albeit we didn't create the chances, so that's something we need to build on. But, you know, defensively solid, we looked a lot better. So I think, it just has to be something we build on. We've got so many games coming up, you know, in the next 6-7 weeks. You know, we've got to play 7 games in February.
Yeah, it's difficult.
All in the league. But the thing is, all these games coming up, they're not against the top two. They're not against Brentford. They're not against Nottingham Forest, who I see as the top five.
Yeah,
the top five teams in the league. None of them are.
Well,
against...
they are the top five.
Yeah, but like, I don't see the teams below that moving into that, move into those places. I do feel like we're kind of above a cut above the rest now. So I do, but we're not playing any of them. We're playing winnable games here. You know, even the games that are away from home. I'm thinking Charlton. They're not in great form. You know, they've lost Conor Gallagher, who's a vital part of their midfield. Mm. Lyle Taylor doesn't seem too happy to still be at the club. He looks like he's pushing for a move.
Yeah,
we're going away to Blackburn, you know, who aren't in great form either, who don't look too good this season, apart from when Bradley Dack's in the side. So, you know, Derby, I know, I understand you've had the Wayne Rooney sort of bounce, but hopefully that ends by the time we play them.
Mm.
So I do think this is the sort of set of fixtures where we can really build up some form.
Do you look back at the Luton results, though, and sort of think not necessarily always great against the lower teams?
Yeah, because Luton was so frustrating because all the goals were so avoidable.
That is every goal we can see.
Exactly, yeah, and that's been the problem this season. If we'd have just been a little bit sharper in defence or a little bit more reactive in terms of trying to play the ball out from the back, we wouldn't have conceded those goals and we would have had more points on the board and we would have been closer to Leeds and West Brom. That's why I find it so frustrating, and that's why I think there still is potential, and we're lucky that the gap is actually now like 6 and 7 points.
Yeah, well, I think that there's a lot more twists in this Championship season, and I'm looking at teams like Derby and thinking, yeah, they're down in 17th, but they could genuinely put a playoff challenge together.
Middlesbrough as well
have been in very, very good form, and then at the top of the table, Fulham, Brentford, Nottingham Forest, Sheffield Wednesday just went and beat Leeds away from home.
Yeah,
it's a great season to be watching the Championship. It's a great league to be in. And last week you mentioned the fact that Fulham could lose a few games and stay in playoff contention shows how poor the rest of the league is. Do you not look at it on the flip side, though, and think, actually, maybe the league's really strong this year?
No, I look at it as, if you look at the season, especially when Newcastle and Brighton went up,
yeah,
if we played like we've been playing, we wouldn't be in playoff contention at the moment.
Right.
I think that you've got to look how many teams are dropping points. I don't think West Brom and Leeds have been that good. I think they've just been the two most consistent teams out of everyone, if that makes sense. You know, Brentford had a horrific start to the season, and now they're looking like the third best team. Imagine if they started the season like they're playing now. So I feel like Leeds and West Brom have just been the most consistent out of a very inconsistent bunch.
Okay, yeah, I get that. But do you think that if Fulham do go up, and it's very, very possible that it'll be another season like last season?
Well, I've said this multiple times. If we get promoted, you get rid of Scott Parker immediately.
Really?
Yeah, I stand by it.
It's only Watford that have really done that, isn't it?
And they ended up staying up the following season. Like, my point is, if Scott Parker's your manager in the Premier League, I don't see it working. We could argue we're technically not underachieving, but not achieving as well as we could. And Scott Parker, I just don't think we'd be ready for a season in the Premier League. I know it is so harsh to get rid of a manager who's got you back up at the first time of asking, but I think if you want to move up to the next level, you want to move forward. Like, for me, the ideal person to get in, if we were to get promoted, would be Eddie Howe.
Yeah.
If he was to leave Bournemouth. I don't see them sacking him, so it'd obviously be on his own accord, but then would he want, you know, a year out of football because he's been at Bournemouth for so long?
Mm. Why would you want Eddie Howe, though? Because it isn't going well at Bournemouth at the moment.
It isn't going well at Bournemouth, but you've got to look at the job he has done in recent years at Bournemouth. The football he's playing is fairly similar to the stuff we've been trying to play, on the style of football we've been used to. So then you're not going from one style of football to the other, like going from Slavisa Kanovic to Claudio Ranieri.
Yeah.
So I think, I mean, that in an ideal world, I said if he was to get sacked, I would appoint him now. But that's obviously not going to happen. But for me, it has to be someone who's still going to try to play the same type of football we're trying to do now.
Up next, we'll talk to Louis Waldock, and we're going to get a update on the Fulham under-23s. In the FA Cup third round replays, what a game at Brunton Park. Carlisle United 3, Cardiff City 4. That is a hell of a game of football. Man United have also taken the lead at Old Trafford. Juan Mata scoring 1-0 over Wolves. Looking like Man United and Cardiff at the moment will be going through to the FA Cup fourth round, but there's still about 22 minutes to play. This is Love Sport London.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
Miles Blumsome here for the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport London, joined by the guys from Fulhamish, Dom Betts and Jack Kelly. Now, Dom, the Fulham under-18s have been in action tonight, haven't they? What was the score? How'd they get on?
Yeah, so they were taking Sheffield United on at Bramall Lane in the FA Youth Cup. And yeah, 2-1 victory, goals from Cody Drama and Pierre Thierry, who was up top today. So yeah, 2-1, on to the next round. We next take on Manchester City.
It's weird at under 18 level, you hear teams like Manchester City and you think they're going to be brilliant, but then a lot of their under 18s are already out on loan somewhere, aren't they? So you can never really tell. It's a great opportunity for Fulham to keep progressing.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't had a good Youth Cup run since 13-14 where we lost to Chelsea in the finals. Hopefully a repeat of that and hopefully go one step further.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move up a youth team and talk about the Fulham under 23s. Friend of the show, Louis Waldock's on the line. Louis, welcome back to the show. How are you, mate?
Not bad, cheers. How are you?
Yeah, really good, thank you. So let's just start by asking you about how good is Jay Stansfield?
I'll tell you what, one appearance for the 23s, one goal, which actually puts him ahead currently of, well, everyone else in the squad. And the fact that he missed out on the 18s tonight makes me think that he will be back on the bench, certainly, Friday night against Middlesbrough. So I think, well, clearly he's got the work ethic and clearly he's got the ability. So Scott Parker's recognising that. And, well, hopefully we've got a real talent in our hands.
We've obviously seen in recent years the likes of Corley Woodrow and Stephen Humphreys come in to the side who never made it at Fulham. But Corley Woodrow is obviously doing the business now at Barnsley, and we could probably do with him now with Mitrovic being injured. But he isn't just going to be another Stephen Humphreys. Do you think he actually has got the ability to make a real sort of impact in the Fulham team in the coming years?
I think so. I think with the right manager, and Parker does seem to be one to bring in youth players, maybe not rush him. Yeah, I don't like expect him to set the world alight this season, but you know, with some time with the 23s, some time in and around the first team, I think we could create someone better than Woodrow and Humphreys.
Obviously, we've got Middlesbrough on Friday. Obviously, Jed Spence and Patrick Roberts coming from Fulham. How do you think they'll fare on Friday night?
It's going to be the game that Pat Roberts remembers how to play football.
Yeah.
but I think the last couple of years since he left Celtic, Roberts hasn't really done much. But Jed Spence is looking like one of the up-and-coming players in the Championship. Mm. I don't know if you saw how he played against Spurs last night, but he kept Ryan Sessegnon in his back pocket.
With Jed Spence, obviously Fulham didn't give him that full-time contract. Do you think he just didn't have the opportunities to show how good he really was, or do you think he's just sort of been a bit of a late bloomer in that sense?
I think a bit of both. And you see it with a lot of players. It was the case of Tom Kearney at Leeds. They just didn't see anything of him, so they thought, right, he's not going to make it with us. Let's just get rid now, cut our losses. But I think maybe he's just found the right club for him, found the right manager, found the right system, and perhaps it just timing wasn't good for Fulham.
Obviously, Matt O'Riley had that unfortunate incident where he was substituted after coming on as a sub. Do you think he'll make any more appearances this season?
I hope so. I expect to see him in the squad again on Friday.
Yeah.
At least I hope. And personally, I thought he did well. He didn't deserve to come off. And I understand why Parker did it, bringing on a more attacking player. But I think O'Riley's got the quality to make a much bigger impact in the first team.
With Matt O'Riley, where do you think he would fit into this midfield? Do you think, like, what kind of midfielder would he have? Because sometimes we play, obviously, one deep and sort of two going further forward. Sometimes it is, you know, more of a three where you have got, you know, someone sitting back like K-Mac or Harrison Reed, and then you've got a Johansson or an Arta or a Josh Onoma in the middle just behind Tom Kearney. Do you think, because obviously when he first came through, and I think the first pre-season tour he went on was in 2017 when he went to Poland. Do you think that, obviously he was more of a number 10 back then, obviously he was a year younger than the Sessegnon brothers, and obviously he got along really well with them. Do you think in the middle of the park, in sort of the number 8 role, box to box, creating from there, is where he most best fit in this Fulham team?
I think for the time being, box to box, but in the future I could see him playing as the holding one, sort of sitting deep. And sort of, I think it's weird, but a holding playmaker. Like, he will be the one picking the passes, looking for the long balls, but he won't be the one that's getting in the box and scoring goals.
If we go back quickly to Jay Stansfield, what do you think Parker has seen in him that he hasn't seen in, let's say, someone like Timmy Abraham, who's sort of been in the Fulham youth teams, obviously known because of the younger brother of Tammy? What do you think Scott Parker has seen in him that's totally different to, you know, what he's seen in other strikers?
I think the biggest thing is attitude and work ethic. And from what I've seen of Abraham, he gets frustrated very, very quickly. And I think we've heard similar things about Taylor Crossdale with why Chelsea didn't want to keep him. It was just he felt he should have been in and around the first team and he wasn't happy about being left out. And I think Stansfield is just one of those players that will keep his head down, get on with it, take every chance he gets and just sort of be more humble, perhaps.
When it comes to the under-23s, a lot of teams get what looks like a great squad of under-23s together. Not many of them often break in properly to the first team. They might get a few appearances. How many other players in the Fulham under-23s at the moment can you see being fixtures in the first team for the next 5-10 years?
Well, I think the main one, as we've touched on already, is Matt O'Reilly. But I'd like to see Marlon Fossey, if he can stay fit. Moritz Jens looks like quite a promising centre-back. And same with Jerome Opoku. He's being absolutely raved about at Accrington Stanley at the moment. I know that's not saying much, but in future years, perhaps, if we're still at this level, Opoku would be one to watch. But in terms of going forwards, Stansfield. I mean, we've seen him already. We know he is going to work hard. But other than that, I'm not sure how many of this crop will make it for us in the first team.
If someone who sort of recently left the club was obviously Teo Edun. He's now moved over across to Lincoln City up north. You know, whenever he came into the Fulham side, he looked fairly decent. There was a few performances under Slavisa Kanovic where he did a job. Do you think it was, you know, it was time where he needed to be playing first team football week in, week out?
Yeah, and I think getting his position right was a big thing as well. We saw him, I think it was Millwall at home 2 seasons ago. He played 90 minutes in that central midfield and he was one of the best players on the pitch. But for the 23s, he seems to be playing at left back, which is not a good position for him. I've seen him a couple of times this season and he just goes missing because he is a midfielder. So
he's sort of Fulham's version of Ainsley Maitland-Niles?
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think Edun had promised he had potential, but I'm guessing I'm probably the only one that thinks that if the club are willing to let him go. I know it's sort of aging out of the youth system now anyway, but I think perhaps had he blossomed a bit earlier, he could have made it.
I don't know if you've seen, but Luca De La Torre has been linked with a move to Sweden. I don't know if you've seen that, but what would you think of that? Yeah. Because obviously he's had his chances with the first team, but it hasn't really worked out for him.
I think a move away is probably going to be best for De La Torre. I'm not sure. Is it Djurgården? I don't really know anything about them, to be honest. I've also seen him being linked with Peterborough. And I think staying in England would be right for him, maybe going down a division. But I'd like to see him leave on loan rather than on a permanent, because I think there is still something there. And we saw against Millwall in the Cup last season, a goal and 2 assists, and they couldn't cope with him. So he is one of the players that I think could have a future in the first team, but there just seems to be no room for him at the moment.
Jasper Silvestre and obviously Jayden Harris on the bench against Villa. I mean, we've seen Jayden Harris a couple of times on the bench this season. You know, Jasper Silvestre, I think, you know, two of these players, most Fulham fans have probably only heard of him by playing Football Manager and seeing him in the youth setup. What kind of players are they? What could they offer to the team?
Well, Jayden Harris is a strange one because he's played on the wing in all but one game for the unders this season. But we saw him pre-season against Brighton and against Oxford, and he was a defensive midfielder in both, which I think is his better position. As for Sylvester Jasper, he's creative, and he always chips in with a few goals here and there, but he is sort of the one that is getting Jay Stansfield all his goals for the under-18s. I think that's something we will need in the future, just some creative spark.
Louis, thank you very much. Louis Waldock there, massive fan of the show, fan friend of the show. He's also a fan of the show. Of course he is. Everyone's a fan of us. It's the Fulham's fan show on Love Sport Radio. Just looking at the under-23s there. Up next, we'll get the opposition view for the game this weekend against Middlesbrough. We're going to be talking to Dom Shaw. He's the Middlesbrough editor for Teesside Live. See what he thinks. We just mentioned some of those former youth players, Jed Spence and Patrick Roberts, who will probably be playing against Fulham, against the club that gave them so much, that gave them their start in this career. Looking at the FA Cup third round replays. Manchester United still leading Wolves 1-0 with 5 minutes to go. Carlisle United, Cardiff City at Brunton Park is a hell of a game. 4-3, the away team. Cardiff City are winning at the moment. This is Love Sport London.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
That's right, it's the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport Radio. Miles Blumsome and the team from Fulhamish, Don Betts and Jack Kelly, are with me. Over on Love Sport Radio, it's the Stoke City Fan Show. So if you've tuned in and you're a Stoke fan, you think, I want to hear about Stoke, just go on DAB to Love Sport Radio. This is Love Sport London, or you can get it online as well. 0208 70 20 558 is our number if you want to get in touch. You can WhatsApp us, you can call us, or you can get us on social media at Love Sport Radio. Right, it's time for this.
The Opposition View on Love Sport.
That's right, Fulham Middlesbrough this weekend. So we caught up earlier, myself and Dom, with Dom Shaw, Middlesbrough editor for Teesside Live. We started off by asking him whether last night's 2-1 loss to Tottenham was seen as a missed opportunity by Borough fans.
Yeah, I do think there was a sense of what might have been over both games, really, because, you know, having got in front in the first game, and Spurs dominated possession in that first game, but they were very predictable, certainly in the front third. You know, they had a lot more about them last night. So to get the nose in front in the first game and then to not, you know, to get pegged back. And then last night, I mean, Borough struggled defensively in the first half, but they did have the moments. You know, Nemecha forced that good save out of Gazzaniga, Fletcher headed wide, wing had the free kick. And then, as you say, in that last 10, 15, 20 minutes, I think the second half actually Woodgate got a reaction out of them in the second half. And Spurs did look vulnerable, and I do think, you know, well, Woodgate said that. He said he had mixed emotions afterwards, kind of disappointed with the manner of the goals, the way Borough started, but then proud of the way they come back. And as I said, left wondering what might have maybe been.
Yeah, both goals came from defensive errors. May has given the ball away in the first half to Lo Celso, and then Lamella being able to slightly too easily outmuscle his way back into the game to then score what was turned out to be a lovely finish. When it comes to these individual mistakes, is this what's keeping some of these players away from the first team regularly? Because it wasn't Borough's strongest side.
Well, may ask probably yes. It's his second stint at Borough. Aitor Karanka initially signed him from Real Madrid. I think, ironically, Jose Mourinho might want to manage him at Real.
He did.
And he signed him to be the number one, but he had his chance to be the number one, but didn't. He's a good shot stopper, Mayhouse. You saw that last night. He made two or three good saves, same in the first game. It's his decision making. He'll slap at crosses, and you saw that with his ball out, with his pass out for the first goal. I mean, the second goal, it was Johnny Howson who was muscled off, but you know you won't find anyone on Teesside who'd have a bad word to say about Howson this year, because he's been brilliant. You know, he's a centre midfield player who's playing at centre half, and that was the thing with Borough last night. You know, they had Paddy McNair and Johnny Howson at centre halves, two centre midfield players. They had a 19-year-old at right back, right wing back, Jed Spence, who's been brilliant. It's credit really and testament to the way Woodgate has turned Borough's form around that they've done it while they're missing so many key players. You know, Brita Sambalonga, obviously Dan Randolph's gone now, but he was injured. George Friend, club captain. Daniel Ayala, who's probably or has been the best defender in the Championship over recent years. Ryan Schott, and obviously Brita Sambalonga. You know, the list goes on. So I think that's why there is kind of a feeling of optimism all at once at Borough, that things have turned round and that they're only going to get better.
What difference do you think this game's actually going to make in going into Friday's game? Do you think the fitness levels of Middlesbrough won't be what they would as ahead if it was just a normal Saturday game 7 days apart?
Well, Woodgate said before the game in his press conference on Monday and afterwards again last night that he'd have quite liked to have left Jed Spence out, because 19-year-old kid, he's played an awful lot of football, and his numbers, when the backroom team have looked down and looked at his numbers, he's in need of a rest, really, but he doesn't have any other right wing backs. But he did leave a few out last night. Hayden Coulson, the young left back, has done really well. He'll come back in on Friday. Wouldn't surprise me if he tinkered up top, maybe started Gested. Patrick Roberts, who's in on loan, has done very well since he came in. He'll play again on Friday. So he does have options. And I think, you know, although they got beat last night and it brings a six-game unbeaten run to an end, I think the manner of the second-half performance and the way they went out, they kind of go out with their heads held high, and it kind of maintains that feel-good factor that's been around the club for the last five, 6 weeks or so. So I think they'll still go to Fulham. Obviously, Fulham have been hit with that Mitrovic blow, so I think they'll still go to Fulham. You know, they've won at West Brom and Preston recently and won very well on both occasions, so I think they'll go to Fulham and fancy it.
You should see Dom's face at the moment. He doesn't look like he's very impressed with that prediction. In terms of the league position, up to 16, 10 points clear of the relegation zone. Like you said, now unbeaten in five in the league, four wins on the bounce before the draw against Derby at the weekend. There were questions being asked about Woodgate earlier in the season. Are they gone now? Is everyone at the Riverside happy with Woodgate? Is he done enough to become not only a club legend as a player, but moving towards being a long-term management prospect at the Riverside?
I think there was performances and results earlier in the season were, and Woodgate be the first to admit that a lot of fans didn't want him to get the job in the first place because they wanted something new and they weren't convinced. An inexperienced head coach was the way forward. He spoke very well in his press conferences unveiling, and that turned a lot of fans around. But then, obviously, as we know, you judge on results, and results weren't good enough. Nobody really saw the turnaround coming. But credit to Woodgate, he's stuck to his guns, and he has turned things around. Even when things weren't going well though in the first half of the season, the kind of noises coming from the top of the club were that they weren't going to panic. There was an awful lot of mitigation. Borough lost a lot of key players in the summer and, players that we've listed before and who would get into many championship sides, if not all. And then there's that injury list, the ridiculous list of injuries he's had to deal with in the first half of the season. So all things considered, I think there was an acceptance that this was going to be a season of transition. And now, Even if they finish middle of the road, mid table, but continue in the vein that they have done in recent weeks, then it gives them something to build on for next season and looking forward, and especially with the young lads coming through. And I think that's what fans are tapping into.
You mentioned Jed Spence and Pat Roberts, obviously two players, especially in Pat Roberts' case, is that Fulham fans will know well. Obviously, Jed Spence, I'll start off with, just because obviously he's had this meteoric rise in Middlesbrough team recently. And, he came for our youth academy. I think he made maybe one League Cup appearance. And then, obviously, you picked him up after we didn't offer him a permanent contract. What do you think we can pinpoint what went wrong maybe in his early career that you've seen at early times on Borough? Do you think he just didn't get enough chances at Fulham to show what he's really about?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I don't know the background. I spoke to him recently after a game. He was put up to speak to the press, and he told them that obviously he was on the ball, but he got the chance to come to Borough. And it's a big culture shock. A young lad who grew up living in London, and suddenly he moves up to the North East. Last year, Tony Pulis talked about it a few times with George Savile, how he's a young lad who's lived in London. And he's come up and lived in Teesside, which is a complete different environment. And Savile's 5, 6, 7 years older than Jed Spence. Woodgate worked with the under-19s, the under-23s, in the years before he got the job. So he knew the young lads, and he fancied Jed Spence right from the start. And he admitted this week that Spence wasn't really great in pre-season, and he had to bide his time this year. When he didn't have a squad number when he came in for the Charlton game. He hadn't even been in the squad before, so it was a surprise that he was named. Again, it was because of this injury list I'm on about. But then sometimes, you look back, Man United years and years ago, Marcus Rashford given his chance because of injuries. And sometimes, youngsters need that, don't they? Just half a glimpse of an opportunity. And he's come in and absolutely taken his chance. And I think last night was his 9th game. And it was the first time he'd been on the losing side. He has been a breath of fresh air. And him at right wing back and Hayden Coulson at left wing back really have been key to the turnaround because they give the side the energy that Woodgate is so desperate for, same with Marcus Tavernier in midfield. So he has been excellent. And his deal runs out, I think it's this summer, but Woodgate has already confirmed they're in talks. Spence says he's happy. So I would fully expect that to be resolved pretty quickly.
If we're looking at the reverse fixture of this season, I'd rather a repeat of that not happen again. Trekking all the way up to the North East for that turgid 0-0 with the Marriott Rolex sending off. But obviously, if we're looking at though, we're probably still in a similar position than we were when that game occurred. Obviously, you've gone this recent run of form. What has changed at Middlesbrough, obviously, since that game? Because obviously, when that game was happening, it didn't look like you could hit a barn door with a banjo.
Yeah, I think at that stage, but the problem was at that stage, I think, Borough kind of didn't know what they were. or what they wanted to be. So Woodgate came in the summer and he was talking a lot about, you know, wanting to play a hard press and wanting to attack teams and pass the ball about at speed. But then, you know, you forget that he had taken over a Tony Pulis team. So really, he's come in wanting to do one thing with a team designed to do the absolute opposite. And he admitted pretty early doors that he wasn't perhaps braced for how difficult it was going to be to try and get Borough playing a completely different way. So credit to him in the early stages of the season, really, he had to go against what he wanted to do, and he had to make Borough more pragmatic and make Borough more difficult to beat. You know, early in the season, he said after the Blackburn defeat that Tony Mowbray had pulled him to one side, and he was obviously a Teesside legend, Mogga, former Borough manager, and said that we all want to play a certain way, and we all want to win games in a certain way. But ultimately, you've got to get results. And I think Woodgate's done that now. He's learned how to get results. And now he's done that and made Borough hard to beat and put the solid foundations in place. Now we're starting to see the football that he wanted to play initially. So I think they were kind of a bit of at a halfway house at that stage of the season.
Fulham are a team this season where it seems like if we score first, we pretty much go on to win the game. But if we concede first, we don't like back coming together. I think the only game we've gone behind and gone ahead to win was the QPR fixture a few months ago. So do you think Woodgate will be seeing stats like that and be looking to attack Fulham from the off, or are they still just going to soak up pressure, you think, and still try to hit Fulham on the counter-attack?
Honestly, it's been so hard to call recently. I mean, no one expected Rudy Gusted playing at Preston, for example. He was thrown in from nowhere, really. And I think that's what... But same with West Brom. He played Jed Spence wide right in a 4-2-3-1 at West Brom, so no one saw that coming. What he did say, and he said this a couple of times, is he'd already had his team in mind for Fulham ahead of the Tottenham game. So there were certain players who he told ahead of Tottenham, look, you're not playing there, but you'll be in at Fulham. So Hayden Coulson, I would think, will be one of them. But Ashley Fletcher's played a lot of football recently, so it wouldn't surprise me if he played Gusted and maybe Roberts off him and kind of tried to go direct. But, you know, he's not afraid to kind of play teams at their own game. So, but I think that's probably, again, another factor which has helped Borough of late, in that they have got more than one way to play, more than one string to the bow, and then that makes it difficult to plan to play against them.
All right, Dom, score prediction, please.
I fancy Borough to score. I think a score draw, 1-1, and Borough will take that.
1-0, and you take a 1-1?
No, absolutely, yeah.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
This is the Fulham's fan show on Love Sport Radio. Miles Blumsome here, joined by the guys from Fulhamish, Dom Betts and Jack Kelly. We've got to say thanks to Dom Shaw, the Middlesbrough editor for Teesside Live, for helping us through the opposition view. In the FA Cup third round replays, Carlisle United going down at Brunton Park in an epic encounter, 4-3 to Cardiff City, and Manchester United getting past Wolves 1-0. Controversy there. Wolves should have taken the lead, but a VAR decision has ruled it out for handball. That leaves Cardiff City facing Reading and Manchester United taking on either Watford or Tranmere after their game was postponed last night. All right, as for the Fulham fan show, let's get into our listener questions. So, guys, Alistair Nemo has asked, can the level of injuries this season be attributed to our style of play?
I'm not too sure, because it's not been like super intense the way we've been playing. If anything, it's been not enough intensity in the way we've been playing. So I don't know. I think we got lucky, I think, in 16-17 and 17-18, that the only sort of serious injury we got was probably the one to Tom Kearney in the second season, and we got lucky. I think, you know, injuries are bound to happen. I don't think that our style of play has got too much to do with it. But I do think, you know, no team gets unlucky of injuries. I don't buy into that. But I don't think it's got to do with our style of play. I just think maybe the players we have this season maybe are more prone to injuries than we had in previous seasons.
Do you think low intensity can actually increase the chance of injury sometimes because they're not putting in the sprints as regularly? So when they do go, their muscles haven't warmed up as much.
Yeah, there's been a couple of not unnecessary injuries, but ones that have come out of nowhere. I remember Joe Bryan getting one really early in the game against, I think it was Reading. Or Bristol City. I think that we've been slightly unlucky at times because Harry Arter got quite a long-term injury when we played Stoke. Harrison Reed has been like on and off for a couple of months now, and I feel like he's one of our most key players at the moment. it could be a blessing in disguise that we don't have Mitrovic again, because we can have more pace up front with Bobby Reid and like Knockhart, Caballero, Kearney in behind. So I'm quite looking forward to seeing how we do play on Friday night.
Sam Gardner, preferred starting 11 with Mitro out.
Well,
formation and players, of course.
Well, so I'd start with Rodak and Gar. I think that's fairly obvious. In defence, probably go Cyrus Christie at right back, Ream and Michael Hector at centre back, Adoy slotting at left back. I still would at the moment after his performance against the weekend.
You keep Brian out?
Yeah, I've not been impressed with Brian at all this season. I think he's been fairly poor. I think he's been positioning out of play so many times. And, you know, Adoy didn't do anything bad enough to bring Brian back in, I think, against Hull. I think he did perfectly well. I think he dealt with Jared Bowen extremely well. So, yeah, I'd keep him inside. Then in the midfield three, if everyone's fit, we're saying here, Harrison Reed, Josh Onimer and Tom Kearney, with Bobby Reed through the middle in a 4-3-3 here, with obviously Knockhart one side and even Caballero on the other.
Yep.
That's pretty much what was picked on the weekend.
Yeah, Kevin McDonald obviously was playing at the heart of midfield. At the base of midfield, and he did really well. Then he went on a night out with Johansson in Wimbledon, which was quite interesting.
Our ends, Jack, innit?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I was like, oh, I've got it. I didn't go out, but I never go to the place they were at anyway. So, but
if you'd seen it on social media, you would have made a beeline.
They went to the Garrett and Gorge.
Yeah, opposite the best curry house in Wimbledon.
Oh, that's class. They went to the Garrett. That is sensational from them too.
Would you change any of those players?
No, I think that's pretty much spot on. Maybe I would start Joe Bryan, but I thought Adoy was our man of the match. I don't know why they gave it to Caviero.
Because he scored a goal, clearly. That's how Fulham man of the match award works.
He's not a natural left back though, Adoy, is he? In terms of the ball, how's he getting on?
When we signed him, he actually was playing left back in Belgium. It's because he's right footed, which obviously confused people. But he's always said he actually prefers playing left back to right back. But when he's played for him, he's never been natural anywhere. He's just been very good at left-back, right-back and centre-back. You remember, the season we got promoted, it was him and Tim Ream that were sort of staples at the back in the centre-back position. So I think, I don't know if Adoy is underrated in that sense, that people don't actually see him, people just see him just as a utility man as opposed to actually a really big first. It's a shame there's no Guy Barlow here, because he would be screaming his praises like he always does. But yeah, I think for me, I just feel like Adoy is just a bit more defensively aware than Joe Bryan.
Fulham Fan Hub have asked, why do we score so many bangers?
I think it's because we've got so many players who actually just have that individual quality to score these absolute crazy wonder goals. We've seen so many this season. We've seen quite a few from Ivan Carriera. Obviously, Knockarts against Villa, Harry Arters against Villa. Kearney scored a few this season. I think, I'm not saying it's getting us out of jail or anything, but I do think that we just do have that individual quality in our squad to get something out of nothing, which, whether it's getting us out of a hole, maybe, but we know we've got it and it does happen.
And the thing is, like, Josh Onam is capable of it as well. He's done it in the past. I think it was England under-21s he scored a screamer for a few years ago.
Yeah, he scored a really good goal against Leeds United, which won us the game, and that's kind of changed everyone's opinion about Josh Onam. Now he's probably one of the best players we have in our squad, the one that I want to start most games. I think also the reason we score a lot of bangers is because our style of play is quite predictable. We always play it to the wings and then pass it around the box, and then at times people are just like, oh, I'm just going to have a go. And then like Knockhart scores and Caballero scores, Onimar scores and Kearney scores. That's how we score the bangers.
Exactly. Okay, from Victor Schlatt, again, a weekly asker of fans' questions.
He loves a good question.
Favourite African Fulham player?
This is a tough one. I think, you know, there's ones that come to your mind straight away. I'm thinking Papa Bupa Diop.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Dixon Atuhu. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking John Pansil. Mm-hmm. Those are the three for me who come straight to the fore when thinking of our best African player. I'm going to go Dixon Atuhu, because I just, you know, that wonder goal, as he said, get away to Juventus. No, the one that deflected him. But I do think that he was an underrated player in that Europa League run and the seasons that followed. You know, he held that midfield together at some stages, and obviously he's got up to mischievous business away in Sweden recently. But, you know, Dixon Atuhu, you know, he had a great chance. I want to walk like you, talk like you, Dixon Atuhu. So, but no, yeah, I mean, but then you can't look, then you also got Papa Bupa Diop's just thunderbolts, the wardrobe,
as
some would say.
Like, for me, a guy whose nickname is the wardrobe has to be a cult legend.
Yeah, he was slightly before my time, so I'm going to go with either Floyd Ayite, although he did help me with a ball at Burton away once, which was painful. But I will go with Niskin Scabano, because I just love him. I just want him to play more. I think he's like injured at the moment. He scored a couple of key goals for us, and he's just an all-round great guy.
There's one more question here, and it's to Dom from Dan Williams. Sorry, Jack. It's to Dom. What is the best pint you've had at an away ground? Not pie, pint you've had. Beer. Right. What beer are you drinking, mate?
So it's an away ground, but I was in the home end of the ground. It wasn't for a Fulham game.
Yeah.
But it was when I went to Southampton for the England-Kosovo game.
Right.
And they had Goose Session IPA at half-time.
Okay, so so you're an IPA man.
Well, it's just a bit something different, a bit different to a Carling or a Foster's, isn't it? Just for a bit or Budweiser, change up a bit. So I really enjoyed that. There was a good ale that Stoke were doing this season. That was all right. It was a bit weak. But no, I think, you know, because usually when you go to a ground, it's like, what, Foster's, Carlsberg.
Amstel.
Maybe an Amstel if you're lucky.
It was Amstel and Heineken at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Yeah.
They're the options.
Amstel's nice, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm going to count Southampton for that game and, yeah, a bit of Goose Session IPA, that was nice.
They've always got cans of Guinness as well, which is always a bit weird because you want Guinness off draft, not off a can. But at the same time, Guinness takes ages to pour.
Yeah.
So if you get in a Guinness, you're either going to have to wait till halfway through the second half before you get it as they turn the tap off and then put the gas out.
They supposedly have Guinness at Fulham, but the way they're trying to pour out to get through everyone for half time, that can't taste nice.
It's not a Guinness anymore. I think the thing is about football grounds is it's associated with lager, but you know ale, especially in a 15-minute period when you have to drink quickly at half time. Ale is not going to get that gassy bubble. It's nicer, smoother.
Fulham, I don't know if it's still there now with redeveloping the side stand at the Riverside, but there used to be an ale hut down the side at Craven Cottage, and used to I think it was a Ludlow Gold Ale down there. that was all right, but you know, I think definitely that Goose Session IPA at Southampton was
what
just
about
sensational.
It? Why was it so good?
It was just different, something a bit different. And just use of a it's either like Tetley's.
Yeah, but you could get a Bulmers and say it's different. You get anything and say it's different. There's got to be something good about it. Why is it the best? This is the best away pint. You keep saying about how many grounds you've been to. You're just saying one's good because it's different. Come on.
Well, Goose Session IPA is just a nice beer. It's enjoyable to drink as opposed to getting a Carling I think a Carling at Wolves is probably the low light.
The low light of your away days. Before we finish the show, let's start just quickly talking about the Middlesbrough game and doing some score predictions, because Middlesbrough are on a very good run. So this is a potential banana skin. We've talked about Middlesbrough as being an outside chance to keep the run going and get into the top six and be a playoff contender by the end of the season. What do you think the score's going to be?
I think 2-1 to Fulham. I think we'll concede first and come from behind again, like we did against QPR on a Friday night. I just think they've got a little bit more about them now. I remember when we played them at the Riverside, they were just awful and they couldn't. I think they went like 5 or 6.
I mean,
games
that was up
scoring.
Their worst game of the season, like Hull.
Yeah, it was just a terrible game.
I think there was actually more chances at Hull and there was one.
Honestly, I think we'll come from behind. I'm backing Bobby Reid to get a couple actually and be the hero on Friday night.
Great, Dom.
2-0 Fulham.
2-0 Fulham. Bobby Reid as well.
I think Cav might get another one, and then I'm thinking, I'm not sure who, but someone in midfield I think will grab one as well.
Could be an anonymous screamer, could be Knockhart.
Well, it will be a screamer, that's guaranteed.
It's guaranteed.
We don't score basic Kearney goals, do we, Mark?
That's just not allowed. Why would anyone want to see a tap-in when you can watch a screamer anyway?
Exactly.
So we got two Fulham wins. I think Fulham are going to get it as well. I actually went to Tottenham Middlesbrough, and I thought Middlesbrough were awful. Really, really, really bad. And I think Fulham are just a much, much better side than that. That was the Fulham Fan Show. Thank you so much, guys. Next week, we're not on because Charlton Fulham are playing. I'm assuming you'll both be at the game.
I will be,
indeed.
Should we just do a quick score prediction for Charlton Fulham as well?
Oh, God.
3-1 Fulham.
4-0.
4-0, wow, that's big. So, no Fulham Fan Show next week. We'll be on in 2 weeks. That's the guys from the Fulhamish podcast. Make sure you check out the Love Sport social media for when that podcast drops at Love Sport Radio. I'm going to be joined by Charlie Hawkins, or I'm going to be joining Charlie Hawkins as we take the station national after 10 o'clock. We're going to be on the Late Night Fan Show. We'll be reviewing the FA Cup results as well. Manchester United going over Wolves in controversial circumstances. I'm Miles Blumsom. This is Love Sport London.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.